Imagine a world where trillions of dollars flow invisibly through a network designed to help the privileged escape taxes and accountability. This isn't fiction, it's our reality. Over half of world trade passes through tax havens, along with half of banking assets and a third of multinational investments. The offshore system isn't just about tax avoidance. It offers wealthy elites secrecy and escape routes from laws governing ordinary citizens. These jurisdictions provide near-zero taxes, excessive secrecy, and outsized financial sectors while ring-fencing their own economies from the harmful services they offer others. What makes this system truly insidious is how local politics in these places becomes captured by outside financial interests, creating zones of ultra-freedom for the wealthy that are often repressive toward critics. Here, turning a blind eye to crime becomes good business, while whistleblowing becomes punishable. This inverted morality has reshaped global finance, allowing the privileged to play by different rules while everyone else bears the burden. At the heart of the offshore world lies not some tropical island, but London itself. Britain operates a vast network, a financial spider's web with the City of London at its center. This web extends through three layers: Inner Crown Dependencies, Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, Intermediate Overseas Territories, Cayman Islands, Bermuda, British Virgin Islands, and Outer Independent Jurisdictions with British links, Hong Kong, Singapore. This network captures nearly half of all international banking assets. The Cayman Islands alone hosts 80,000 companies, three-quarters of global hedge funds, and $1.9 trillion in deposits, four times New York's banking sector. Contrary to popular belief, the world's most important tax havens aren't exotic islands, but powerful nations themselves. As offshore specialist Marshall Langer noted, the most important tax havens is Manhattan. The second most important is London. This was proven when an academic tried setting up anonymous companies. Of 17 that agreed without identity checks, 13 were in wealthy OECD countries, including 7 in Britain and 4 in the United States. Before offshore finance dominated, a remarkably different international system prevailed, one with carefully regulated cross-border capital flows. John Maynard Keynes designed the post-WW2 Bretton Woods system to domesticate finance by restricting capital mobility. "Let finance be primarily national," he wrote, envisioning financial institutions serving society rather than dominating it. The system prioritized stability over speculation and long-term growth over short-term gains. Capital controls were comprehensive. Individuals needed government authorization for foreign exchange, with passport stamps indicating approved amounts. Corporations faced similar scrutiny for cross-border transfers. This period became capitalism's golden age, delivering impressive growth rates, 4.0% in America, 4.6% in Europe, and remarkably 3% per capita in developing countries, significantly outpacing their performance after controls were later dismantled. Historical evidence consistently shows countries least dependent on international capital flows experienced the strongest economic growth, while those embracing aggressive financial liberalization suffered recurring banking crises and widening inequality. As post-war America flourished under financial regulations, Wall Street bankers sought escape routes. They found one in London, where British officials welcomed American banks with minimal oversight, creating the Euro-dollar market, an unregulated dollar-based banking system outside U.S. jurisdiction. Washington tolerated this offshore expansion despite it undermining American financial controls, partly due to powerful bank lobbying and partly because policymakers dismissed it as a weird, temporary anomaly. The deeper reason was America's desire to maintain the dollar's status as world reserve currency, an exorbitant privilege allowing the U.S. to borrow in its own currency and print money to fund wars and deficits, while preserving domestic regulations. They believed they could have their cake and eat it by keeping rules at home while allowing an unregulated dollar market overseas. What they hadn't anticipated was how this offshore market would eventually rebound back into the United States with destructive consequences. By the Thatcher-Reagan era, both nations were losing faith in manufacturing and embracing finance. The City of London became a crowbar for global deregulation as lobbyists worldwide cried, "If we don't do this, the money will go to London." While fighting tax havens abroad, America has become the world's biggest secrecy jurisdiction. Delaware exemplifies this transformation, hosting over half of U.S. publicly traded companies and nearly two-thirds of Fortune 500 corporations. While offering modest tax advantages, Delaware's true allure is its laissez-faire corporate governance, granting tremendous power to managers at shareholders' expense. Since 1899, when the DuPont family influenced the state to adopt permissive corporation laws, Delaware has led what its own Chancery Court history calls a race to the bottom. The state's business judgment rule grants corporate bosses extraordinary freedom from stockholder oversight, with Columbia law professor Bernard Black observing that Delaware courts let managers treat shareholders like morons. This reaches absurd proportions at 1209 North Orange Street in Wilmington, a modest brick building legally housing 217,000 companies, including Ford, Coca-Cola, Google, and many special-purpose entities behind the financial crisis. The Tax Justice Network now ranks the United States as the world's most important secrecy jurisdiction by a mile, representing a complete inversion of America's public stance against corruption. The country that once led global anti-corruption efforts now leads the world in enabling it. The offshore system has ravaged developing nations, particularly Africa. Global Financial Integrity estimated Africa lost $854 to $1.8 trillion in illicit financial outflows between 1970 and 2008. A University of Massachusetts study found capital flight from 40 African countries reached $607 billion with interest during 1970-2004, far exceeding their $227 billion external debt. This makes Africa a net creditor to the world, but with a crucial caveat. Private assets belong to wealthy elites, while public debts burden entire populations. Tax revenue, which makes rulers accountable to citizens rather than donors, is crucial for sustainable development. As Kenya's revenue commissioner stated, "Pay your taxes and set your country free." Yet tax havens provide escape routes for elites, undermining accountability. The system persists through secrecy. Whistleblowers risk their careers and safety, while fragmented structures ensure most insiders only glimpse portions of the whole. Reform requires tackling the offshore system through transparency, prioritizing developing countries, and confronting Britain's offshore network. Key solutions include country-by-country corporate reporting, automatic multilateral information sharing, and combined reporting with formula apportionment, treating multinationals as single entities. Land value taxation shows promise, since land can't move offshore, making it immune to tax havens while optimizing land use. When corporations threaten offshore relocation, governments should remain firm. The financial crisis proved much financial activity is harmful, and quality projects will always find funding. We must reframe discussions about offshore finance, questioning claims about efficiency, and distinguishing between harmful tax competition and legitimate level playing field policies. Without containing financial secrecy, we risk creating extreme inequality where few prosper while most struggle. The choice is clear. Enable a shadow financial system that undermines democracy, or reclaim economic sovereignty for all.